So, greetings, everyone. I'm excited to welcome Ramesh, CEO and founder at Mia Health. Ramesh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Yeah, great to have you on. Excited to talk. So first, tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. I'm from this part of the world, Southeast Asia. It's Singapore where I am right now. I trained as a physician in the UK, found a way to treat a kind of breast cancer, decided to become a surgeon in a surgical program. I then realized I didn't really want to be a doctor, became an investment banker via an MBA at London Business School. So as a banker at UBS, Morgan Stanley, and Barclays, I spent 12 years either analyzing healthcare stocks, selling them, or doing mergers and acquisitions around the world. So in London, Hong Kong, New York, Singapore, and briefly. And then in 2015, joined a client, become CFO and CEO of what was then quite a small company, Fullerton Health, which I helped grow. So we did 22 acquisitions in 2.5 years. We grew to about 5,000 people in 6, 7 countries, building a vertically integrated ecosystem. And then in 2018, I had to leave that company at the start of an IPO process because my kid lost his mom. So when she died, he was only 5. So listing a billion-dollar company in New York, dealing with a big running company and then, looking after a 5-year-old, something has to give. So I decided my kid came first. So I quit my job, became a stay-at-home dad. I lasted about 3 months and then decided I was going to start a company to fix the reasons my kid lost his mom. And that was the origin story of Mia Health, very much designed around fixing two issues. One was really around the how patients find and access healthcare, making sure they get the right doctors at the right time. And then trying to fix health insurance, because a lot of health insurance was pretty manual and what we felt was had broken processes. So really designed around a cause in mind.
Well, yeah, quite the journey. So thanks for sharing that insight. So let's talk about your, quite the journey, physician to investment banker to founder. So tell us about your current project. So tell us about Mia Health. What products and/or services does Mia Health offer?
Sure, we do two things really. One is really around making sure our patients find the right doctors and get the right care at the right time. So that's deployed via an app, what we call an avatar, which lives in an app. So essentially, think of it as something you can talk to, and it will talk back. You can tell it what you have. It will tell you what you're covered for, how you can access it, whether you get a telehealth consult, a physical visit, or even calls you an ambulance. You can tell it certain things. It will then follow you up after the fact to make sure you're okay. And if you're not okay, bring you back into the system. So it's really about intervening at the right time. The other thing it does is help you manage your chronic disease. So most patients don't know what to do day to day around things like diabetes, et cetera. So it helps do that. It connects you with even your relatives. If something's wrong with you, tells you, hey, call your mom. A diabetes, she's not going very well, et cetera. So it's really a kind of daily concierge, if you will, around healthcare. The use case is really to go into the front end of a health insurer. So more member engagement, more interaction, rather than just, dealing with the insurer twice or three times a year. So this is currently deployed in Poland, where, initially we rolled it out to help people manage diabetes. It's very diabetic focused. We recently got that approved as a medical device in Europe. So software is approved as a medical device, so called a CE mark, et cetera. So that's part one. Part two is really around everything you need to run a health insurer from the inside. So think of these as big insurance core systems. They do everything from handle how claims get into the system. So obviously this part of the world, we're still using, PDFs sent by post sometimes. And so it's really around how data gets into the system, how the claims are processed, so all the rules surrounding whether a claim is legitimate, and the fraud, waste, and abuse, right? 1 in 4 medical claims is either fraudulent, wasteful, or unnecessary worldwide. So it's really around systems that detect that and eliminate that. And then finally, it also handles disbursements, so the paying out of claims. So pretty much everything short of distribution that you would want to run a health insurer from the inside, that's deployed in Indonesia, Philippines, and Malaysia as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm guessing the health insurance side has to be very localized, right? Every country different on how healthcare works.
We wanted to build a global company. And what we actually said was, you know, look, why aren't there any global insurtechs and healthtechs? The answer is that you're right. Every system could have different language. So for example, an antibiotic, you may have 6 different brand names in the US, you know, 5 in Indonesia, but still the same antibiotic. So you're right in a way. On the face of it, it looks different, but underlying, it's the same molecule, it's the same procedure, it's the same room and board charge. So the answer is actually, what if you had a way to harmonize and standardize data into a common dictionary? Then you can go global, right? You can localize these machines quite fast using a combination of machine learning and tools like an OCR, right? You scan a number of claims, the machine basically updates the dictionary and you're good to go. And actually, that's our core IP. Our core IP is really less around the rules engines, more around how is data harmonized and standardized and put into a dictionary. And that's the core IP that we built. And because of that, we could actually localize a new machine within a month when we go to a new country.
And who are you after here? Is this like B2C after the individual healthcare consumer or trying to get into healthcare system and they push it out to their patients? Who are you after here?
Yeah, so I've been doing healthcare for 25 years around the world. And one thing I've learned is that all change in health stems from the payer. So in the US, for example, I forget the statistic now, but I think it's north of 60 or 70% of all Medicare payments are now outcomes-based, right? That didn't happen overnight, but it's very much driven by the payer, not the providers, right? So that's the theory. This is a company designed around having impact. So we focus really on the payers, meaning we go to an insurer, we try to make them more efficient. Hopefully that broadens coverage. And these insurers could then sell to individuals or to corporates, so corporate health insurance plans as well. In this part of the world, in Southeast Asia, it's still very much more corporate market than an individual market. But if you go to certain other countries, that may be the reverse. But we still sell to those same customers.
Okay.
In fact, we've actually started getting inquiries from governments who also run health plans because they are also a payer.
Yeah.
It's the same machine, just needs to be done on a bigger scale.
Yeah, with a big challenge to solve. So in what year did you found Mia Health?
So about 4.5 years ago, 2019. So coming up to our 5th anniversary.
Okay, well, congrats. So it's 5 years in. And then you mentioned you're in Singapore. Is that where your company's located then?
Yeah.
Okay. So Singapore HQ, and what's your current team size?
We don't have a big team. The entire team is about 31 people right now. That includes TPA or third party administrator business. So the other unusual thing we did when we built the company was to say, we didn't want to be stuck in endless POCs because that tends to happen in health tech companies. So what we did was we built our own third-party administrative claims in Malaysia. So we built our own medical network. We won a couple of outsourcing contracts from insurers to actually manage their health plans. And using those data points, we then began life as a SaaS company where we use those data points as proof points in our machines work because this is a mission-critical infrastructure. Essentially, if our machines don't work, insurer operations don't work, right? Which is fairly critical. So those proof points were invaluable. So including that team, we have 31 people.
Okay. And anything you want to share around, you know, revenue size, ARR range currently?
Yeah, we don't publicly disclose, but we kind of say we have an order book in the tens of millions. And the reason for that is that most of our contracts are in long term because these are mission critical systems for insurers. They don't swap them every year. So typically an average contract duration for us is around 10 years. And the shortest we actually have is 5. So when we sell, it's a kind of chunky business. Like you sell one contract and you get a big bulk of revenue that lasts you for 10 years. So it is a rather different business than a monthly kind of ARR.
Okay. And tell me about on the sales side, what is your current ideal customer profile? You mentioned, you know, insurers, payers. So who are you going after right now as prospects?
Yeah, when we did it, you know, we had to run it lean. You know, we built our company just before COVID. So it wasn't very great. we've never really had an easy fundraising environment, right? So when you're actually finding resources, you have to be efficient. And so you couldn't hire 10 sales guys and have them running around. So the best way to do this to get penetration into insurers, which can have a very long sales cycle, was to start with the mid-size insurer. So typically we'd go to the number 9, number 10 insurer in the market and say, if we have this, you know, we can enable you to do it one human, what you're doing with 10 currently, and improve kind of customer satisfaction and customer journeys. Are you game? And it's faster to get penetration in that segment. They go to the number 1, number 2, number 3. You know, the big guys essentially always think they can do it themselves. Until proven otherwise, right? So you go to the mid-sized guy, and then you go to the guy slightly bigger than that guy and say, hey, we get the guy behind you a better gun, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's been our strategy, right? And that's how we've gone from mid-size. Now, if you look at most of the pipeline, it's now a top 3. But we didn't start there, which would have been phenomenally expensive and taken a long time, you know, to get traction. So that's our strategy in a nutshell. We do use partners. So in each country, there are people with better local connectivity than us. So in each country, we develop a network of partners to help open the doors. You know, we currently deploy it ourselves, but, you know, eventually I think we're moving to a model where other people will deploy it for us. It takes time, as you know.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So that direct motion into those mid-sized insurers, work your way up, start working on that partner channel. And then let's shift over to the fundraising side. How much capital have you raised to date?
Yeah, so we've publicly disclosed this. We've raised just under $10 million from a variety of sources. So we started with quite a large angel loan of about $2 million. And that was a seed, largely individuals, mainly private equity principals for some reason. I guess they see the value in this kind of business long term. And then we did our first institutional round in 2022. That was with a strategic called SD Engineering, which is 51% government owned through Temasek, and Elevate, which was a deep tech VC. And then we kind of did a add-on round for the balance and brought in two other VCs. So Heltex and Central Capital. Central Capital is a fintech investor, largely out of Indonesia. Heltex is a part of Jungle Ventures, and they do health technology investments. And then we brought in the government agency Enterprise Singapore, as well as a Swiss foundation called Foundation Botna. It is an unusual cap table because we're viewed differently by different people. So, you know, some of our investors believe we're more of an insurtech than a healthcare company, which is unusual, obviously.
Yeah,
it's an exposition. But there are some investors who focus very on the healthcare part of it. And hence, you have a variety of investors. And SD Engineering obviously views as a very large data play, which is our focus, right? Harmonizing and standardizing healthcare data.
So interesting, diversified, kind of a different cap table. So what, thinking about your fundraising journey, what were some of those triggers or milestones that led you to a raise, you know, versus say bootstrapping?
Yeah, I think bootstrapping a company like ours would not be feasible. It does cost money to build a data dictionary and this methodology of harmonizing and standardizing data. Right? And you can only do it if you have data scientists, technologists, and doctors working together in a team. So the way we approach technology is very different, right? The tech build is led by, you know, all three of those kinds of people working for the same person, one of my co-founders. So we couldn't bootstrap it, just wasn't feasible. So from the start, we really needed capital. And, you know, there was no real defined strategy at the start in terms of fundraising, because in 2019, or just before COVID actually, kind of took money where you could get it. And so the fastest way to get this off the ground was really angels, you know, people we knew. We were well connected as a team. So that part of it was relatively painless. We just go to angels and say, this is what we're trying to build. They also believe in the cause, right? They're trying to fix a problem. I think after that, it was really a case of getting not just investors who could contribute cash, but also technical support or commercial access, which is where we took on a strategic SD Engineering. It's also good validation of the technology. They are also the largest defense contractor in Asia, I believe. So, you know, when they validate the technology, it goes quite far reputationally. So for those reasons, we brought them on. And then there was a case of getting multiple points of validation. We did want a fintech investor because we knew that, you know, we were selling to insurance companies. We did need a deep tech investor because of the core technology around, you know, harmonizing and standardizing data, using machine learning to improve the dictionary. So we wanted that point of validation. And then finally, we did, you know, we do have some healthcare chops. So we did need a health tech investor to come in. You know, the fact we raised from a foundation recently is just a validation of the mission, because our concept is, hey, we can make health insurance work better, more efficient, more profitable, and perhaps you could broaden access, because we operate in a part of the world where health insurance penetration, it's not like the US. We only have 10% penetration in some of our markets. So Indonesia, it's about 10%. So there's still a long way to grow, but the best way to do it is, hey, make you more profitable, make you more efficient, so you can broaden coverage to underprivileged or the underserved, right? So we do have that social element to what we do, which is why it was important to bring on this Persfish Foundation as well.
Yeah, really, really so interesting.
It's become more deliberate. I mean, initially, yeah, you go where you can get money, and then later on, you kind of pick and choose, right?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, quite the fundraising journey so far. So for other founders listening, any fundraising lessons that you learned in the process that you'd like to share with the founder community?
Yeah, I mean, as a banker who's raised a lot of money progress during the past, and even at my last company, Fullerton, we did raise about $600 million or so over 2.5 years. You know, I think the fact remains, it's a lot easier to raise $250 million as a big slash, you know, larger growth company than it is to raise your first million, you know, getting off, going off a PowerPoint deck, essentially. So I think, you know, there's no substitute for hustle. You know, there's this misconception that says, hey, you know, given your track record, you've raised billions of dollars professionally and for other companies, this should be a piece of cake. It really is a, right? There's no substitute for just doing meetings. And so I think the first rule is don't say no to a meeting. Just take it. You know, you will literally have to see tens, if not hundreds of people to raise money. And so go for it. Take money where you can get it initially, but be mindful of, you know, at the final stage who you bring in. Meaning, you know, if it's a small check, fine, you know, but the moment you start to bring in, you know, reasonable check sizes where they can have outsized influence on the company, then I think it's about making sure that whoever is coming into the company has the same values, right? And I think that's important. Because if you take money, a large check from somebody who doesn't share your values, the mission gets somehow skewed or perverted. And that's not why most of us build companies. Most of us build companies because of a mission. So I think to just bear that in mind, the bigger the check size, the more outsized the influence, the more selective you have to be around who you bring into the company. Valuation is actually second. You know, you can give away 10% more at the start, it's fine. As long as you bring in the right people who will support you, it's a long journey, obviously.
Yeah, I appreciate that insight. That does a very common theme with founders is founder investor fit, you know, finding that right investor who believes in your mission. So Ramesh, based on kind of the current stage of your business, and I'm curious because you've got the healthcare play, you know, maybe the insurtech play, what number are you focused on, a number or metric that kind of gauges your success or progress right now?
Yeah, it's really to kind of get into 100 million people. There's no science behind 100 million people, but basically we think if we can influence the insurance for 100 million people, that's a good goal, right? We're only just starting, really. I think we will hopefully cross up 1 million this year. 1 million, we get a bit of a tailwind, and then you kind of go from there. We don't mean it's geographically focused in that sense, right? The 100 million come from anywhere, but we have this goal of 100 million lives to be kind of impacted as a metric.
Yeah. Well, that's a clear big headline number, 100 million people. So love it. So what's coming up next? What are the big goals in 2024 for Mia Health?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're in the market. We'll need to do a raise this year. So we are doing a Series A, mainly to kind of fund to hire more people to deploy the contracts we signed, because we do have a big order book now that we need to fulfill. There'll be some money that's allocated toward continual R&D, because obviously you can always get better as a product. I think we'd probably add a new geography. So currently we do Indonesia, Philippines, and Malaysia. So we'd like to try and penetrate our home country of Singapore, which we don't really focus on commercially yet. And then kind of go from there. I think we also want to focus on deepening the talent pool. You know, I think at this point of our life cycle, we need to have a bit more of a professional management bench, you know, so that we're less reliant on the co-founders. And then kind of see from there. We're also looking at a couple of acquisitions. So interestingly, you know, because it's a tough fundraising environment, we get shown a lot of deals. And because we're a more experienced management team, I think people come to us naturally. So I think, you know, it's just a function of finding either product fit or market access fit that kind of helped us get to 100 million faster. So we are looking at transactions as well.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Lots of goals coming up for 2024. So love that. And Ramesh, really appreciate your time and sharing your experience today. And if listeners would like to learn more about Mia Health, where should we send them online?
Yeah, we have a website and there's a very easy way to get in touch. So www.miahealth.com or I'm always on LinkedIn. That's how my co-founders. So I'm usually the first point of contact for pretty much in.
All right. Well, appreciate that. So check out Mia Health and that's MIYAHealth.com, correct? So MIYAHealth.com. Check out what Ramesh is doing there. Connect with him on LinkedIn. And again, Ramesh, really appreciate your time and sharing your journey today.
My pleasure, Ben.